forum for frank talk about what people do for a living. Work Stew.
Hello, and welcome to Work Stew. It's April 19th, 2013, and this is episode number 63. I'm Kate Gase Walton. I'm the editor of Work Stew, an online collection of essays and interviews in which people ponder their work lives. In this episode, I speak with a musician based in New York City, cellist Jennifer DeVore. So I'm speaking this morning with Jennifer DeVore, a cellist. And Jen, thank you for talking to me.
Hi, it's my pleasure.
So let's start with how you became a cellist. What was your path to what you do now?
Well, I was about 4 years old, and my mother is a pianist, and she happened to play a concert on the harpsichord for the only time I remember her playing it. She doesn't actually like original instruments, with a gamba player, and the gamba player has beautiful long red hair. And my mother said, "How did you like the concert?" I said, "Something about something being beautiful," and I think it was the woman.
The red hair.
But my mom bought me a cello the next day and said, "Well, if you love the gamba, you have to start in the cello," so she could say I chose it. And I have no regrets. I love the cello.
Okay, I'm going to completely reveal my ignorance now. What is a gamba?
A gamba is a 5-string fretted instrument. It's a little smaller and a little bit earlier. It's chordal, like a guitar, if you play it with a bow.
Okay.
It's very beautiful looking, too. This is all very Renaissance looking kind of concert.
Right.
And I never went back to the gamba. It's a great tool. I just never did. So.
And so you started at age 4, and then did you just take to it instantly? Was it something that you remember loving as a child, or was it sort of an endurance test to get through that time of practicing?
I would say that I always had mixed feelings. The practicing was not my friend. I was never good at that. I would actually run around the house screaming about.
That must have been fun for your parents.
Yeah, but I did practice every day. But then my mom would say, "Well, if you don't practice, you can't play." And then I'd say, "But I want to play. I liked playing concerts, or I liked playing chamber music." I was doing that already in like third grade, playing in a quartet and an orchestra and all that stuff. So I loved playing with other people, and I did like the music. I just, it was a struggle.
Right. So was there ever a time that you gave it up for at all, or have you stuck with it literally since age 4?
No, actually, when I was in college, I played chamber music for a while, but then after college, when I moved to New York, I was working for an art consultant. I did not touch it for about 18 months, which was really liberating. I was an art history major, and I decided to go to Harvard that I thought it was impossible to be a cellist. I thought I had already made the decision not to be a musician. And so I had to go the long route, just the way I do things. And I was having a bit of a career crisis. I didn't like being on the business side of art. Mm-hmm. And I was out to dinner with my brother at Finelli Cafe downtown. And I said, I think I'm going to become a cellist, which is, to me, felt like a shocking revelation. And he said, "Okay, that's really obvious. That makes perfect sense."
So, So when you were, was it at college that you decided not to become a cellist?
No, I think when I decided to go the liberal arts route, instead of going to conservatory, even though plenty of people like Alan Gilbert and Jenny Gilbert and all of my friends were musicians at Harvard and then became musicians, I didn't know that was possible going into college.
I see. So you're saying that really by choosing to go to Harvard versus, say, a conservatory, you thought you were choosing not to be a cellist.
Right. And then it sort of didn't occur to me that I could change my mind.
Right. And so what do you think went into that thinking about not being a cellist? What were you worried about or concerned about?
I think I'm not sure if I'm actually going to answer your question exactly, but the thing that did happen, referring back to my not wanting to practice my whole life, is that when I stopped playing and came back to it, I actually understood that I was choosing to practice myself.
Right.
And I was a lot more efficient and enjoyed practicing. Not always, but And so I guess I had this idea that I had to be a famous soloist by the age of 18 and go to Juilliard, and like there's no other way to be a musician. Even though I had a working musician as a mother, I somehow thought that had this idea of a path. It just wasn't true. So I had to kind of lose that, after college. So
it sounds like you were then able to come back to it in a very different way. Was there still some stress though about, achievement and that sort of thing, or were you able to enjoy it in a purer way?
There's always stress about achievement when you're constantly, but I thought about my future and I thought, what was this idea that I had? Was I really going to go around playing Concerti and like staying in these hotels in the Midwest and playing the same piece every night? That wasn't ever what I was going to do. I thought, if I can actually live in New York, which I really wanted to do, make an okay living in a variety of ways and play some chamber music, that's something I would like to do. And that seems quite possible. So that's what I'm doing.
So that was the other thing I wanted to get a real sense of, is what the life of a cellist living and performing in New York is like. How do you make it work? I mean, how do you make the financial piece of it work?
Well, I do privately and I love my students. And I did pay my dues. I taught some classroom stuff for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Packer Collegiate School in Brooklyn. And I now am allowed to go and teach there after school and be very flexible and just have private students. So it's not so tied to the job,
mm-hmm.
Which I like. And it also, I don't have to do the bureaucratic stuff involved with teaching. And right. I love having the regular relationships with my students too, because in my performing life, it kind of goes in chunks. I have some regular groups. I have a violin and cello duo that, we have a few concerts throughout the year, so I'm always in contact with my partner. And then other things where I'm just hired for like a week and it's a one-off thing, which I really like that variety too. So I have a regular orchestra job in Harrisburg. So it's just kind of like some things that are regular, and then word of mouth, I just get these little boons of work.
Right. So one thing I sometimes hear when I talk to writers is that they are surprised by how much of their day, just their working hours, goes to themselves marketing their work versus actually doing it. Does the same phenomenon exist in your world? Are you having to kind of package and market yourself all the time, or is it really different?
It's interesting you should say that. I should spend time doing that, and I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because I find it very unpleasant. But I mean, even just writing a bunch of emails and kind of keeping up with my job takes hours and hours and hours. But the actual marketing, like having a website and stuff, I'm not so good at. But yes, that is something that musicians complain about spending a lot of time doing.
Right. And so let's end on that note. Like, when you think about the work life that you have put together for yourself, what are the things that really excite you and sustain you about it? And what are the things, especially that somebody considering, say, following in your path, should be well aware of and know of as downsides or challenges?
I am sustained by having usually a project to look forward to, something I've done recently, something, coming up in the future. I just played 5 of the Bach cello suites. And I'm actually going to play another bit of one for the Dance Theater of Harlem next week. And so as long as I have something that I, feel is giving me some kind of spiritual satisfaction, I'm okay with that. That's just something, that's why I'm doing this, of course. The pitfalls of being a musician are making enough money. I don't know who said this, and I would love to give them credit, but there are three things. You need 2 out of these 3 qualities to be a successful freelance musician. You either have to get along with everyone and be easy to work with,
mm-hmm.
be really, really reliable, or play so incredibly well that no one gives a shit about anything else. You need 2 out of 3 of those qualities. So in terms of like the marketing, you also just need to sort of be able to like network in person and hang out. And those things I'm good at. I have to say, instead of like actually spending time working on websites, I do tend to go out after concerts, meet people, stay in touch,
Right.
That's a handy trait to have.
That wraps up the interview for today. Thanks again very much to my guest, Jen DeVore. Thanks also to everyone who's contributed an essay to Work Stew. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening today. The next episode will be released in 2 weeks, and I hope you'll check it out. In the meantime, please let me know what you thought of the interview by sending an email to kate@workstew.com, by posting a comment on the WorkStew website, or by writing a review for iTunes. Thanks again, and bye for now.